Batman. Can somebody tell me what kind of a world we live in where a man dressed up as a bat gets all of my press? This town needs an enema.
You ever dance with the devil in the pale moonlight? This is FilmSack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to FilmSack. This is FilmSack, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind, episode 227. I'm Scott Johnson. Joining me this afternoon, we have Brian, Don't Dance With Him in the Pale Moonlight, Dunaway.
Good idea. Hi. Maybe if every day wasn't foam, latex, rubber, muscle day, you could work on your hand grip. Maybe some sticky tape for your gloves, even. This has been the bane of your failures. Get it, bane. And the creation of a lot of your enemies. Yeah. Always slipping away from you. That's all, gentlemen. Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen. That's all.
Merry Christmas.
Brilliant. Also with us, Randy screams more than Vicky Vale in a two-hour period. Jordan.
Aloha, Scott. Brian. I think it's time to come clean. It's the holiday season, and everyone who still has access to their inner child will understand what I'm about to confess. Hell, Brian, inner child Ibbot, already knows what I'm talking about. There may have been bad guys in this movie, but each and every one of us secretly wishes, just once, we could go into an art exhibit and have fun with paint on everything.
Yeah.
But we all know that Batman is out there, and he has no soul.
No, none. He's Beetlejuice. Don't say it three times.
He does have rabies, but no soul.
Yeah. Finally, Brian, what have we here, Ibbot?
Very appropriate. Yeah. What have we here? I have a letter from Batman. It says, please inform the citizens of Gotham that Gotham City has earned a rest from crime. Oh, hold on. Let's do it right. That Gotham City has earned a rest from crime. But if the forces of evil should rise again to cast a shadow on the heart of the city, call me. Use this bat signal, which will both alert me to the need for justice and to strike fear in the hearts of those who would do the people of Gotham harm. Also, take this bat sheet. You'll have to figure out some way to hang it in the sky so that my bat signal has something to project upon. I don't know. Use a helicopter or something. It's not my problem. Find Batman.
I wrote awesome. This down. This is true. Yeah. I thought the same thing. I'm like, only on a cloudy night would Steven come close to working, and even then, the definition would be horrible.
Yeah,
right. Yeah. My alternate greeting was going to be, oh my gosh, we need Batman right now, but it's 11 a.m. Just wait until about 8 hours have passed, and then we can use this thing.
Yeah, what the age, man? That just seemed real dumb.
But you know, that's old school Batman. That's not necessarily this movie's fault, but yeah, it's always been a Batman problem.
But still, I think it's even a problem in the Nolan movies, is it not? Even the Nolan movies are a little bit weird. With how that thing projected.
A little bit.
Yeah. I mean, they were a little more, the image in the sky was a little less defined in the Nolan ones, as if to suggest that perhaps.
Oh, I see. We're only talking about that. When you said Nolan movies are a little weird.
Oh,
I was
no,
thinking
no.
About
yeah, they're all
a
weird.
Lot of things.
Yeah.
Forget the fact that somebody's got to be monitoring the sky constantly for it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. On the lookout.
Right, exactly.
Man.
It just sits there. Batman sits there. All right. Well. All right, Alfred, I'm off to work, and he just gets on a lawn chair and on the top of Wayne Manor.
You know who's having to do that tedious job? Alfred. Alfred has to do all horrible, tedious jobs.
Yeah.
It's true.
This is definitely the Alfred of the ilk of he's just scurrying around doing everything. We know that he's smart. We know that he's got great forethought and all of that. Those things are kind of a given, but this is busybody.
But Batman cannot wipe his own bum of the guano that collects there without Alfred. Like,
is Michael Goh your favorite? Is your favorite Alfred? One Alfred? Yeah,
probably up there. I mean, I liked Michael Caine.
It's hard not to like Michael Caine because he's Michael Caine.
But he seems a little bit too big for the part sometimes.
Right? You got to remember, Michael Caine is Ebenezer Scrooge, and it's really hard to let go of that.
Mm.
You know, like even if you watch all the way to the end of the Muppet Christmas Carol, when he becomes a normal guy, you still spend the rest of his career thinking about him as Ebenezer Scrooge.
Yeah.
And so then when he's Alfred, you're kind of like, yeah, so he's a jerk. Mm. Like they never, you never see it on the screen, but you kind of feel like when Alfred leaves the screen, Michael Caine Alfred is a jerk.
Some people just want to watch the world burn, Mr. Wayne.
It's a pretty bad impression of Michael Caine.
I thought it was pretty spot on.
We knew where you were going with that.
It is.
I think when you think of, when you, you know, if you tell somebody, visualize Alfred Pennyworth.
Pennyworth. Yeah, that's Pennyworth. Right.
The one they're going to picture in their mind.
Because he has no money.
Yeah.
That's right. The one they're probably going to picture in their mind is going to be the Michael Goh or Michael Goff version of the.
Yeah, he's got a great look. The guy, didn't he just recent? I want to say he didn't die that long ago.
Yeah, it was within the last few years. A couple years ago.
Anyway, my favorite Alfred, though, surprisingly, is the one on Gotham right now, the young Alfred, who's kind of a bad A.
He's the total badass. He's like a Michael Stratherin. Oh, who am I thinking?
David Statham.
David Statham. Yeah.
Is it David?
Not the guy from Good Night and Good Luck. No, right. David Statham. Yeah, he's kind of like the
Jason Statham. Jason Statham.
Jason Statham.
Definitely
Statham.
Not David. Definitely not David.
David Statham.
Jason Stratherin.
You know, yeah. The kick-ass futuristic martial arts man, David Stratherin. That guy. All right. What?
Did,
go ahead.
Did that guy who talks sometimes before the show, did he already announce this thing on the Batman?
No, he was about to. He was about to. Here he is now. It's Scott Fletcher. Explain what movie we're watching.
Batman! In director Tim Burton's adaptation of the comic book classic, Bruce Wayne starts to make a name for himself as a masked Avenger. To the criminal set just when the flamboyant Joker takes over as tops in the Mafia.
Yeah, there you go. That's one way to tell the Joker story that isn't accurate to the comics at all, but sure. Go ahead.
Wait, yeah, it's not. And they played a lot around with the script and you know, they played with the idea that Joker killed Batman's parents when he was younger, and of course, no, that's not really lore.
To me, it's who's Wolverine's kind of nemesis? I always forget his name.
Sabretooth.
Yeah. When they treated Sabretooth in the first X-Men movie is how I feel about how this movie treats the Joker, because it's so retcon, so not accurate,
I have a very important point to make about this. Before I do. Yeah. I just want to say my favorite Alfred is George Coe's voicing of the character Woodhouse on Archer. He's all Alfred. The whole point of that character in Archer.
It's a joke. Right.
Yeah. The idea.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so weird that this guy, this old American dude who really hasn't ever been in anything British, is the voice of this so put upon old man butler in Archer. I love that character very, very much. So having said that, I want to put it to you that many different parts of this film, this Batman 1989 Batman movie, are thoughts that Batman has. Bruce Wayne remembers something, or he thinks about something. Something occurs to him and you see it. It gets acted out in front of you, and it's this horrible flashback thing that they've done in a lot of other Batman movies.
Yeah.
I want to suggest that he has certain memories, and then the Joker comes along and his memories get altered. He is remembering something, however he is now, like a bad dream, and it's just his imagination. He is now facing the Joker and putting the Joker. Remember, this is the entire movie is an Inception story about the Joker. This is the Joker creation movie.
Yeah.
And he's putting that into his memories, his bad dreams. It may not be that it's actually the story that young Bruce Wayne.
I think that's very wishful thinking. I think that they are literally saying to us, hey, the Joker, when he was young and a thug, shot your parents and did that pale moonlight joke to you then, and he's doing it again now that you're an adult. I think they are saying that is literal, and they basically rewrote the origin story of the Joker. Now, I don't have a problem with that for most mainstream audiences, because they don't know any different and they don't care. As far as they're concerned, that is the origin story of the Joker. But for people who were my age at the time, who were into this stuff. I was 20.
New comic books. Yep.
And I was new comic books, and I knew what was going on. This just felt like a slap in the face then, even. Today, it feels... today, I'm a little more forgiving, because now we have some other movies to compare them to, and we kind of... I can kind of let it go more now. But back then, that was hard for me to let go. And I remember day one in the theater going, I don't know about this. This is a bad idea. The Joker did not kill his parents. This is not this conveniently connected. And it irritated me to no end. So I am not a fan of them deciding to do that. But I'm never a fan of them doing that in any comic book movie. It's just annoying to me.
You compare it to the way they treated Sabretooth in the first X-Men movie. I probably would more compare it to the way they treated Deadpool in X-Men Origins.
Yeah, that's better. That's a better comparison. Because the Sabretooth thing was more of a throwaway. It's like Angel was in the third one. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, he's a really important character, super big in the books. We'll just bring him out for a little candy here and make him this mindless henchman of Magneto. Like, it'll be a complete waste of your time to have him there. But then later, maybe we'll have, you know, that Wolverine movie for all of its faults. I thought Liev Schreiber made a pretty good Sabretooth, and it was an interesting story and gave it some backbone. But I don't like it when they do that. It drives me crazy. It's either they don't think enough about the character to want to go all the way.
Right.
Or so they just kind of half-ass it. Or like Storm is totally half-assed through the whole series of those X-Men movies.
Yeah. Yeah, she totally is. And the issue, and I wonder if this had anything to do with it, but of course the age difference between Michael Keaton and Jack Nicholson, if they would have had a younger actor playing Jack Nicholson, apparently, according to the IMDb trivia, there's about 50 other people for all three of the major roles, Vicki Vale, Bruce Wayne, and the Joker, that were considered. If they would have gone with a younger Joker, I could see them not having the ability to say, okay, he's the one who shot your parents.
Yeah. Well, they may have chosen to do something else, but it's not that I hate the idea that movies can't have their own freedom with the content. They should be able to make choices that make more sense or whatever. Mm-hmm. For the most part, this is the thing I came away with this new viewing of this movie, is I came away going, Jack Nicholson was awesome. He was really good in this. Yeah. Like, I'm not complaining about the Joker at all. I just think maybe this is how the story started. And he did it with his Apes movie. It was terrible for that same reason. It's like, oh, it's supposed to be a reboot. Well, then I'm going to change everything and kind of ruin it. Well, you don't have to do. You don't have to go that far. You can make little changes here and there. You can have John Cheadle show up for no reason in the second Iron Man movie and not really explain it.
Well, there's a couple of things. I mean, first of all, I want to say that what Randy said about the theory about him kind of messing with his mind. Usually, I throw those kind of theories away and go, no, if you didn't tell it clearly in the movie, then your theory does not exist. But I think this movie got convoluted really quick and kind of lost a little bit of its vision because it was going on during the 1988 writer strike. And as a result, some of the rewrites were written by some hacks. And so I'm just saying that some things that may have been included in these rewrites may have kind of skewed the original idea. And I think in the original idea of Tim Burton's vision of this duality of kind of like both of them are really screwed up. Both of them are screwed up totally in the head, Joker as much as Batman. And I can kind of see maybe something kind of leaking through like that because I did think the timing of the revelation of him remembering what the Joker said when he was a kid was kind of odd because it happened later on. It didn't happen like immediately because you would think Batman would have immediately caught it and said, I've been waiting for those words to be spoken since my parents were murdered. I've had that on my brain forever, but he didn't.
But we're giving him too much credit. This isn't the Scarecrow who can do this to you with drugs and things.
Right.
This is just the straight up ass Joker and it's straight up ass Batman. And Batman's not got a tendency to go, I don't remember shit. I've got implanted memories in my head. I think that's weird.
What I'm suggesting is that this Bruce Wayne suffers from nightmares and a few delusions, and we don't have to take everything in those as canon.
What about the delusion that you can put a silver tray in your chest plate as a chest plate on your shirt and not die from somebody shooting you point blank?
Yeah, how about that one? That one's a leap, isn't it?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
I think it was just a matter, and just to kind of put a pin in what we were talking about a second ago, but it's just Tim Burton not thinking, or maybe more the writer. I don't know who wrote this. I don't think it was Tim Burton, but
no, he directed.
Not thinking that audiences were smart enough or would follow it enough if Bruce Wayne didn't have some sort of extra vendetta against the Joker. Like, right. Just the fact that he's this criminal who's terrorizing Gotham isn't enough. He needs something personal, you know, to make it make him a true adversary.
I agree with that. And I understand that that's a thing that you do to some success in movies. Like, that's a thing that people naturally glom onto and give it extra chutzpah, for lack of a term I'd rather say.
Sure.
I can't think of any other word. But yeah, like that, I get that, and I would totally get why they do it. And in 89, you're even more likely to do this, and it's fine. It's just too convenient. And it's your major guy, you know, it's your major villain in the entire Batman mythos.
Remind me, because I did forget a lot of the Man of Steel. But was Zod partially responsible for the blowing up of Krypton?
Yes, because what he was supposed to. What was the deal?
They had been abusing their resources for so long.
That's right.
He was the military arm of the government, and the government was like, "You're so full of crap."
Yeah, he was basically enforcing that you don't need to panic and leave and send, or in this case, you know, Jor-El went under that water thing where the baby things were being born and took the kid out and shot him into space, which was totally against whatever regulations were in place. So I think that's why Michael Shannon was all ticked. If we're to get to the answer, I think that.
So Zod was responsible for in the most recent Superman movie. Zod was responsible for Clark Kent's, or I'm sorry, Superman's parents getting murdered or dying.
He killed his mom, right?
No, she died in the blow up. He died at the hands of Zod. Dad
died at the hands of Zod.
Then Michael Shannon got busted for that. And after everybody kind of collected themselves and took back the power and then put him in the whatever zone, Phantom Zone. Yeah.
Phantom Zone.
That's all very consistent with Superman 2, because we don't get details about why he's in the zone.
Right.
But at least
you're in the zone.
But at least there's some semblance of continuity there, a little bit, and I always appreciate that a little bit.
Do you guys remember where we were at as far as superhero movies go in 1989? We were so simultaneously stoked that we were going to see a Tim Burton movie, because Tim Burton was starting to come into his own, and were so excited about seeing a Batman. Yeah. But we were also all like, Michael Keaton. What?
Yeah, people
Mr.
were.
Mom is Batman.
Yeah. Okay, no. But that, I don't think that's exactly right. I remember the summer of '89 really, really well, because this movie dominated it. This and Star Trek.
No, huge. And it's huge.
I was working at a Boy Scout camp, and I really desperately wanted to leave camp and go see this movie. Mm. And for whatever reason, my mom did me a solid for once in my entire teenage life. And she gave me the Batman book, like the movie adaptation novel.
Oh, the Reedy book.
So that's your only experience up until this viewing? Is that what you're saying?
Well, no. I'm just saying that when the movie premiered and I couldn't go see it because I was working at Boy Scout camp, I had this book to read. And of course, I had very little else to do in the evening with a flashlight, so I read the book over and over and over and over. And then I went and saw the movie, and of course, the movie was not as good as the novelization.
Get out of here.
But the music was so good. Yeah, and my recollection is that everyone going into this thing was talking about how it was the first truly dark comic book movie.
Well, it kind of was at that point.
Yeah, that
there wasn't
had
a lot
not
to compare
been.
It to, though. I mean, Superman had come out, Superman 1 and 2.
And 3.
I think Superman was very dark. It had hope, but I mean, it was pretty dark.
But Superman was?
It wasn't for film noir, skipping but along the idea. With,
no, exactly. There's nothing. I disagree. Those movies are the opposite of dark, which it should be. It's Superman. It's not supposed to be.
Dark moments. Will you at least give me dark moments?
Well, all right. When she was buried in gravel because of the earthquake and he reversed the world, I suppose that's a little dark, but...
What about him losing his powers? That was so depressing and dark.
No, because you knew he'd get him back and he'd throw his logo at you.
At a diner.
Yeah.
Not so really dark, because even that was comical.
It was.
His whole planet died. The whole place. Uncle Ben died of a heart attack.
You're reaching. Did
I keep going with all the tragedy in his life?
But he had his dad on a little crystal VCR in the middle of his fortress of glassitude, so he was totally fine.
Yeah. And nothing was ever in the dark. It was always bright light out.
Right. Exactly. Superman works during the day. Yeah. Batman works at night.
And all the bullying. I mean, whatever.
But dark means something a little more than the situation is by definition difficult and mature. Dark means that the way that it is performed, the way it is shot, is also challenging to the viewer.
Yeah.
If Superman is in a otherwise dark situation and freaking Christopher Reeve has that goofy grin on his face, it's not dark. Mm-hmm. And I'm saying that this movie came along and said, we're kind of going to go in a strange way here for these kinds of movies, for superhero movies. Mm. And everybody bought it. And so Michael Keaton being Batman didn't really strike anybody as a huge departure, because these kinds of movies had always starred people like him.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know? Yes, it's after the movie's out. Yes, and
you,
I think a lot
didn't
of people
have people, Marlon Brando as Batman
right,
before.
Right.
You know what I mean? Before
right,
this,
right. But you could. What I'm saying is, leading up to the movie, huge controversy that he was cast. After the movie, people were cool with it because he did it. He was fine. He did fine.
It was definitely discussed, but I'm saying it wasn't a big deal. Like, looking back, we think of it as a bigger deal than it really was.
Oh, it was a big deal before. Before we saw the costume, and because we all did the same thing. We all went Michael Keaton, and then we put him in that
blue spandex.
That blue spandex from the '60s TV series, and we all saw him in that, and we was like, no. No, no, no.
Well, also, you think of him as very short, which is something he's really got going against him. Like when they turn around and say, now for your next few Batman, we're going to have Val Kilmer and George Clooney, and you don't think of those guys as a little wee man.
Yeah. I was trying to find some stuff. Actors.
But okay, can we just talk about Keaton's stupid facial expression? I mean, because let's face it.
Yeah.
When you hire a Batman for these first couple of movies, these first Batman movies, I mean, he has to be a decent Bruce Wayne, and he has to have a strong enough chin, because that's the only feature that you will see underneath the costume.
The cowl,
It has been 25 years, and I am still not convinced that Michael Keaton wasn't wearing a prosthesis.
I swear that man
a prosthesis chin?
Chin, yeah.
Oh, really? I think that's his chin. I think that's his chin.
Yeah, because it's a really weak chin. I don't think it's a strong enough chin that you could even...
I think it's pushed up and stuff.
Under the mask, he looked like he had a lot more chin than without it.
I think it's shoved up. He's got like 10 pounds of rubber shoving up toward his face.
That's what I'm thinking. I think it was more like a push-up chin bra thing. I don't think it was necessarily like a wonder chin is what it was more like. Yeah.
If we gave funny titles to our episodes, this one would need to be push-up chin bra.
Yeah.
But were y'all annoyed extremely by Michael Keaton's duck lip things that he would do, like when he was wearing it? It was like he did little duck
lip
things.
Yeah, but every one of all the Batmen,
right.
I feel like he's the least egregious. The rest of them did ridiculous things with their face. Bale's voice was the worst.
He had like some kind of duck call in his mouth or something. It was weird.
It was awful. Yeah. By the way, he's on record as saying, Keaton's his favorite.
I don't credit or discredit Bale anymore for that after hearing the Bane thing. I've decided it's Christopher Nolan calling for people to sound ridiculous.
Yeah, but I love the Bane thing. I think the Bane thing is cool. I know it's kind of it is a little ridiculous, but it's kind of cool. Like,
if not for Christian Bale doing the Batman voice, it would have been cool. Mm. Following that, it's just ludicrous. That's
okay. I think you've got to do that though. I mean, you got to think that there're going to be villains out there with voice recording technology who are going to say, "All right, let's get a voice print of Batman. We can finally figure out who it is behind the mask."
Yeah.
And his vocal patterns match Bruce Wayne's exactly.
I agree with that. But the actor was told, you've got to disguise your voice And let's work this thing out. And then he ended up sounding like Cookie Monster all the time. And that wasn't the solution.
Well, I agree with that. Yeah. Okay. I think Bale's choice of voice thing is bad.
I didn't have a problem with that.
It drives me crazy.
Okay, it was the lisp that was bothering me with Bale.
He had a lisp and didn't notice. Did he?
Well, no. Christian Bale has a lisp anyway. And so it was just kind of emphasized by this.
You know who's hot? Kim Basinger.
Yeah. All right, sure, she's good looking.
Arguments? Wow.
Well, no, you're just you kind of turned a corner real fast and I wasn't expecting it.
Whiplash
went straight from what's wrong with his voice to she's kind of hot. Check this out. So here are the, I'm going to give you rapid fire style, the people that were up for this role before Keaton got it. Okay. Mm-hmm. I want you to tell me if any of these jump out as terrible ideas, because I think some of them are really bad. I think some of them are okay though. Alec Baldwin, at that time, probably okay.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Jeff Bridges, at that time, probably okay.
Ooh, hold on. Jeff Bridges.
Yeah, no, man.
I'm trying to think of 89 Jeff Bridges.
Yeah, exactly. See. Like way past Tron, 8 years right. after Tron.
Yeah, but not too far from Starman. He's still pretty young then.
Yeah, all right. Okay. He can do the brooding, sure. You know. Yeah.
You think, oh, man, you pissed on my carpet, man. Okay. Emilio Estevez.
Bad idea.
Yeah, that would, oh, he would God, be, yeah. Oh, my gosh, would that laugh? Yeah, oh, my God.
It's real bad. Matthew Broderick was up for the role. Terrible.
I'm trying to imagine it. I'm
you trouble. Can't. You can't. No. He's too marshmallowy. Don't. He can't be Batman.
Right.
Kevin Costner. At that time, maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Maybe.
It's a strong maybe.
I would definitely not like it as much now if it had been.
My problem is I can't imagine Kevin Costner as a city guy, a rich city guy. Like,
right.
The thing that Michael Keaton brought to this was his awful hair and glasses. And he, as awful as they were, he wore them like a guy who had lived a life in a city penthouse and knew about money. Freaking Kevin Costner, man, he so belongs in the country dancing with wolves.
Yeah, I give you that. He doesn't seem like the type, but he could have pulled it off for me because I'm a huge fan. Yeah, John Dunbar as Batman. Tom Cruise, I would say now more than then, but I don't like the idea either way.
Yeah, I've been all right. I think I could have seen a Tom Cruise.
Too young in 89, though. That's like Top Gun.
Mm-hmm. Man, he would make a great Bruce Wayne.
Well, that's the problem, is that his Bruce Wayne would be like every other character he plays, and that would, and Bruce Wayne would be the closest that closest the Tom Cruise has played to the Tom Cruise character,
right? His natural character,
right? And so it would take you right out of the film. You'd be, you know, you'd be, by the way,
A Few Good Men is his natural character. That is the center point.
So. Exactly, and you basically just put a rich Few Good Men. Tom Cruise is Bruce Wayne.
That's basically it. Yep. Well said. You got your Michael J. Fox was up for the role at one point.
That would be a fun Batman.
Oh, God.
Harrison Ford for a hot minute.
Oh, my gosh. Harrison Ford.
That's what this says.
Another person with this real rural sensibility by comparison to Bruce Wayne.
I question these IMDb lists.
You know? Yeah, it does feel random. Because I haven't even got to it. Bill Murray's on this list.
I don't understand.
What they're doing is somebody's like, because it's some of this is crowdsourced. Somebody just took the 12 biggest actors of the time.
Yeah,
for consideration.
Yeah.
It's weird that Emilio Estevez is there because
Bill Murray.
Because if he's serious, if he plays it serious and uses all of his talent, his brother Charlie Sheen might have actually fit the character.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, Charlie Sheen could have pulled it off for sure.
It has Bruce Willis on this list. I could have gone for that.
What?
I'm not saying he should
it's
have.
It's just a list of everybody who was between 20 and 50
right.
and had ever been nominated
had some popularity in 1989. Exactly.
Adam West has said in his 1994 autobiography that he was disappointed. How can that be? Oh, yeah, 94. Admitted he was disappointed in that book, said because he was not asked to reprise his role in that movie. I think that is some wishful ass thinking from a 60s era Batman.
I don't know. You know, I think if...
No,
I'm going to be honest with you
defend
now.
It. Come on, Dunaway.
I can defend it. I can actually imagine him being, if he wasn't all playing tongue-in-cheek, I think he could play some serious stuff. I think he could have been serious enough. I mean, he would have accepted that. But
have you seen him in that you went, man, look at the chops on
that
guy.
They could have never convinced the audience. I think as an actor, I think he could have done it.
I'm not sure.
I don't think they could have convinced the audience that you know, the comical, the way it was then, and then fit into this Tim Burton attitude. I don't see how that could have transitioned, because audience would never bought it.
His argument,
I think he could have did it seriously.
His argument is a lot like Kirk's or Shatner's argument that he played it in the 60s and he could do it again in a movie adaptation. And that's true. And he did.
I'm telling you, the reason that the list like this is so questionable is because I guarantee you, if there was actually a private casting call for this character, they actually talked to people that you wouldn't think about when you just think about who was famous in 1988. You know, I'm sure if that actually happened, they talked to someone like John Malkovich back when he had hair, or to Tom Hulce guy who played Amadeus, you know, that sort of thing.
Like I would have preferred an aging Batman as Jack Palance. I would have just rolled him
Forgot to mention. Yeah, he's in this thing.
He could have done some single arm push-ups, like, and I think it would have been great.
In a man.
Seriously, I don't know what happened to Tom Hulce. I think that's his name. But that guy could have played this character brilliantly.
Yeah. The Joker, there were other names up for the Joker. I don't know how true these are, but Willem Dafoe, David Bowie, John Lithgow, Tim Curry, and James Woods.
Bowie would have been fun.
You just said David Bowie and John Lithgow back to back.
I said David Bowie.
Yeah, I don't see David Bowie having the random off the cuff whoop.
Yeah. The psycho stuff that Jack Nicholson does is really good in this.
Yeah.
Like, well, that's because he made it his own. Jack Nicholson made this Joker his own. It would have been a different Joker if you had have had.
It's a fun Joker. I remember being kind of poopy on it for a while, thinking, whatever, they should have, you know, I couldn't remember. But after seeing it again, it's like, you know what? He was really good. Like,
yeah. He kind of carried my stance. I was, you know, if you would have asked me before I watched it again for this viewing to rate Keaton and Nicholson as Batman and the Joker, I would have said, oh yeah, Nicholson just wasn't right for this. I would have said a D, and then Keaton was really good B. And I would totally reverse that after watching it today. Mm-hmm. That Nicholson was spot on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He was amazing.
My only problem with Keaton is he's just a little guy. And I never can get over that. I need my Batman to be big, broad shouldered guy.
Like, I can't believe you named all those guys. You didn't name Tom Berenger. He would have been
that's
interesting. That's
because IMDb didn't name it.
He would have been a very interesting idea.
I agree. Oh my gosh, Tom Berenger in his day would have been a great Batman.
What about Kevin Kline that year? Like, he would have been.
Mm-hmm. He's on the list.
He was on the list.
Yeah, he's on the list. I just didn't get to him. Charlie Sheen's on the list, so I stopped early. Supposedly Schwarzenegger, Mel Gibson, Charlie Sheen, Bill Murray, and Pierce Brosnan, Tom Selleck, Daniel Day-Lewis.
Oh, Tom Selleck Batman. He had to shave that mustache. No way, man. Or a mustache Batman. That would even be even better.
That's amazing. Right. With that thing sticking out of the cowl.
It's obvious Donna who you are.
I can see your mustache.
Don Amici, did I hear that name floated in his day?
Trying to think of somebody with a mustache.
Don Amici in his day would have been a cool Batman. Not so much in the cocoon years, but... Yeah, I mean, whatever. It's all coulda, shoulda, woulda. But I think in the end, I just remember a lot of talk about, I cannot believe they cast Michael Keaton. This is going to be terrible. And he wasn't terrible. He was fine. He was great, in fact. I think he was good. Christian Bale's been on record to say his favorite Batman is Keaton's Batman. So, you know, we'll take that for whatever it's worth.
What else is he going to say?
I don't know.
Myself?
I really like awesome. George Clooney in that third one. Or fourth one. That pile of shit.
Pile of shit. Hey, Billy Dee Williams is Harvey Dent.
That's a bad idea.
I think they really missed out, because Harvey Dent is a really interesting character.
He is, but again, this is Sabretooth again. They just don't do it right, or they don't care. And even Commissioner Gordon's wrong. It's wrong.
Oh, wow. Commissioner Gordon was horrible.
He's not right for the job. He was right for the 60s. And I like that actor. We've talked about him before.
Yeah,
died recently.
He was the 60s Commissioner Gordon, wasn't he?
No. That was a different dude, but they're very similar. Yeah. You're right
he
to feel...
He looks like the assistant.
Yeah, that's true. That guy would not have aged if he was the 60s.
Yeah, you're right to feel the comparison, because they totally are a lot alike. But I don't know why you go that way. It's just not that way. You're supposed to be... I mean, for all the things you could level at Nolan for whatever his problems are for the newest trilogy, he was really good at casting for the most part. I thought, mm-hmm. like, what's his name as Commissioner Gordon was a really solid
Pat Hingle
pick. Yes, that's the old guy. Yeah,
yeah, and he's one of the few that was in all of them.
Yeah, like, he was there.
He
well,
played the character across different Batmans.
He was,
and he gets to play a deeper role in the follow-ups. By the way,
he does. But it's important to note too. There's continuity between all of those Schumacher and Burton movies. All of them are supposed to be the same Batman, same storyline. Right. Whereas, you know, when that ended, that was it. We're done. We reset it. Hey guys, I'm breaking in here in the middle of this thing, not for breaking news, not because something has happened and we need to make sure to bring it to you. It's because I have a deal for you. I have a reason for you to be excited about our sponsor. Our sponsor today is TexasBeard.com. The Texas Beard Company, man. All natural, man-made beard care products for all of us. We all have beards here on the show. Do you have a beard? I'll bet you do. It's 2014. Dudes have beards. It's how things go. So whether yours is Gandalf style or just getting started out, you want a much less itchy and much softer experience and way of life with four manly scents. How about that? Oh, man. Women like beards. Who doesn't like a beard? Everybody likes a good beard, unless you're the lady with the beard, and then not so much. But then even then, circuses want you, and even then you could use TexasBeard.com to help you out. I want you guys to save some money. Use the code FILMSACK at checkout and get 20% off your entire order at TexasBeard.com. That's 20% off with the coupon code FILMSACK. As always, free shipping anywhere in the U.S. for orders over $25. That's TexasBeard.com. Take care of your freaking beard today. There was supposed to be Robin in this first script. That got scrapped.
Yeah.
There was some
Robin right out. Good, because most of those first generation Batmobiles, Batjets, and that kind of stuff, no room for Robin.
Yeah.
Right. Well, also, this was I've seen this movie many times, and I was surprised to watch it in 2014 with, you know, adult eyes, yeah, and go, whoa, look at how progressive this film is about sexual mores and about crime and punishment. Like, it was surprising to me. I hadn't really ever picked up on that before. Like, I'm glad there was no Robin, because Batman and Vicki Vale basically have a one-night stand right out of the gate. And I like to think of everybody as a bunch of adults when I'm watching this now.
Also, how dumb am I? When I saw it in the theater, I thought those news people being all disheveled and having zits and no makeup and their hair being all crappy. I did not put two and two together and realize, oh, it's because the Joker has tainted all these care products and everyone's afraid to use them. So that's why they look this way. The joke was always lost to me. For me, it was like they were disheveled because they were working around the clock to bring you the story of the Joker.
That makes
you
sense.
Know?
Yeah.
By the way, here's a trope.
Well, you got a trope? Hold on there.
An example here is when a news anchor in his 30s stops wearing makeup every day. Yeah. Huge zits.
Oh,
huge
big, giant zits on the face.
No kidding.
Yeah.
I mean, if you don't have makeup, apparently it's a nightmare.
Well, the reference is not just makeup. It's like they can't use soap, they can't use shampoo, they can't use, like, they have to be unbathed, disgusting.
They can't pop pimples.
Yeah.
Yeah, apparently can't use a comb.
Yeah, a comb or a brush.
Like, apparently Joker poisoned all the combs too.
That was kind of I mean, whatever. Say what you want about that storyline, but I had fun watching Jack Nicholson ham that shit up.
Yeah. Oh, and this whole thing, this trope of we took away something and now everybody's a mess.
Yeah.
Oh, I loved it.
Like, that one's a good one.
It just really made me smile. It's played very funny. And this movie doesn't actually have a lot of funny. A lot of the times the Joker's the only one laughing, and what he's laughing at is kind of horrific.
Yeah, he says, there was a great quote, and I didn't put it in here, but there's a great quote from Jack Nicholson when they asked what he liked about playing him, and he says, what I like about that character is he thinks he is the funniest person in the room. Nothing he says is actually funny, and then becomes really scary, and he likes that combination of he thinks he's hilarious, but nothing is hilarious. It's all terrible.
And it's not even sometimes it's just bad jokes. It's not even sometimes even scary jokes. Sometimes it's just nonsense.
Yeah.
And it's kind of unsettling. It really is.
And he did a great job. So of the Jokers, though, if I'm putting Cesar Romero, him, and Heath Ledger up there, I'm going Heath Ledger, though.
Yeah.
And I don't know
even today.
Yeah, I'd take it today. Ledger's amazing. You haven't seen that long enough, dude. You got to go watch that again. He's insane.
And also, we're separating out the performances from the rest of the movies, right?
Absolutely. That's what I'm saying. Take it out of the films.
Heath Ledger's performance, like, as a single actor in front of a green screen, is phenomenal.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, the movie is not aging well. Like, go back and watch it, and it's way long, and it's sometimes the music is way more dramatic than the movie deserves. But man, just looking at him performing,
he's amazing.
You know,
amazing.
I think I don't want to speak ill of the dead. I know it got a huge boost in our minds from the performance because he passed away.
Not
for me.
Yeah, I think we're remembering a little bit better because I remember seeing the movie before he passed away. I remember thinking, yeah, that is really good interpretation, but he hasn't quite nailed it yet. And I think when he comes back, or if they have him again in the next one, I think he's really going to nail it because I feel like some of the things weren't quite totally coherent because I felt like he was falling a little bit into.
But he died before that.
Dark.
Yes. He died before that movie came out, though. Yeah,
that's what I mean. But yeah, but that's what I mean. When I was watching, I was thinking it's too bad he didn't have an opportunity to take it further because I feel like I feel like it fell just to, don't get me wrong, amazing performance, but I don't feel like it was fully realized, whereas I feel like Jack Nicholson's Joker was completely and fully realized, so, and it was so over the top.
It's so hard to compare the two because of that reason, because the Joker, Jack Nicholson's Joker, way closer to the traditional comics Joker, laughing, homicidal maniac, blah blah blah, whereas Heath Ledger's Joker, brooding.
It's a very different take, wasn't it?
You know? Yeah, very, you know, just as broken as Batman, even more broken than Batman.
And you know, I don't want to, someone's going to call me out on this on the webpage or something, but I understand that I keep saying retcon. People hate when I use that word. I understand they go back and do what they want, but you know what? I mean, Heath Ledger's Joker is very much that way. It's like, you know what? What if his face was cut? What if these smiles weren't brought on by some chemical thing? What if it was him using razor blades to give himself this horrible grin? And so they did that too. I don't know why I have less of a problem there.
All I've got to say is both were, oh my God, amazing performances on both parts. I think just personally, I prefer my Joker the way Jack Nicholson played it. I'm not even going to say that it was a better performance than Heath Ledger's. I'm just going to say I prefer the way it was played by Nicholson. How about that?
And I'll tell you who has the character nailed down in video games, and that's Mark Hamill.
And cartoons.
Yes.
Although, if you want to,
his way of portraying the Joker is just. It's just the scariest, funniest thing ever.
Mm-hmm. If you get a chance to see Under the Red Hood and want to hear a third alternative, you'll be blown away by John DiMaggio does a Bender and a bunch of other stuff. I went into that thinking, oh, the dude that does Bender and the dog from Adventure Time, no way this is going to be good. He's really good in that.
It is so good. And almost any of the DC animated stuff they're doing now, if you're not watching that stuff, that's where the real quality product is.
Yeah, missing out, right? That stuff's great. Right. Yeah, the best DC stuff in 10 years is like direct to DVD animated.
The Blu-ray that I watched that has Batman on it also has the animatics for the unshot scene or the unfinished scene or unshot scene introducing Dick Grayson and Robin, which was going to be in there. And for that one, they actually have, it's funny, they've got Kevin Conroy doing the voice of Batman. They've got Mark Hamill doing the voice of the Joker. And it's really cool. It's, you know, you're just looking at storyboards and they're moving and they've added sound effects and music to them, but you're looking at storyboards and it's still really, really cool.
Yeah, I love that.
And I'm so glad they didn't include it because basically Joker would have been responsible for killing Dick Grayson's parents too.
Oh, really?
Nice.
Yes. Oh, no. Well, Kiefer...
I'm just killing everybody's parents.
Supposedly, Kiefer Sutherland was offered the role as Dick Grayson and turned it down, but they ended up not using it anyway, so it wouldn't have mattered whether they turned it down or not, but it was almost freaking Jack Bauer as Dick Grayson.
Yeah.
Wow.
I would have preferred a Kevin Bacon, a really dancy Kevin Bacon. That would have been better.
That's it.
You know, that would have been better than Kiefer Sutherland. I think Kiefer Sutherland as Robin would have been the saddest thing ever.
It was so sad because he was so sad during that time. That was kind of like during the Flatliners time, right?
Yeah, would have been Flatliners-ish. Lost Boys, 93 or whatever that was. Yeah.
And he could have actually, I mean, he could have been on the short list for Batman instead of Keaton.
Maybe.
Kiefer Sutherland. He's got the lower half of his face. You know, he's brooding.
I need a guy to have some muscles, though. I need a Batman who's not a tub of goo. You know what I mean?
Well, not a tub of goo, but not also not a not a, a strand of spaghetti.
Yeah, easily.
Right.
Either
it's
one.
Funny yeah, how, go ahead.
I was just going to say.
I'm Batman.
Bula, bula,
bula. I'm Batman. All right, it's Randy's turn. Go ahead, Randy.
George Clooney, man, he's a skinny guy. Like he's never once portrayed a character that has muscles. And I'm with you, Scott. I need this guy to be a little younger, which is why Christian Bale was so right for it.
Yeah.
And muscular somehow. Even if you've got to fake me out.
Batman Begins is where I think he really nailed the look. He was clearly working out the most for that. He had the right weight, like all that stuff looked right. I felt like by the time we got around to the Bane one, he looked real thin and looked had hippie hair. And Batman no longer was Batman for me by the time the third Bale movie came out. The first two, fine. That third one, he just didn't look like Batman.
Would have been very interesting to go back in time 12 years and see Daniel Craig in that role.
Oh, dude.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Well, we know he can fake that American accent. And,
Yeah. Oh, boy. Speaking of voices, there is an animated series called The Batman, which took place over like 2004 to 2008, something like that.
Yeah.
The voice of the Joker is really good. It's Kevin Michael Richardson, who's Cleveland from Family Guy.
Oh, wow. Really?
But when he does the Joker on the Batman animated series, he's very good. He's the Joker. He really is the Joker.
Bruce Wayne. Yeah, I can't imagine. That's insane. That's really crazy. All right, I got one of these. Rich people who eat dinner a mile away from each other at either end of a giant table in an old dusty.
I love that trope so much.
I hate it. I hate it.
Oh, I love that trope so much.
It's annoying. It's like they can't hear each other. Oh, no. What a funny situation you found yourself in. Why don't you just scoot around and sit next to each other, you weirdos? It's a terrible trope.
They joked around with it. I think
they talked about how ridiculous it was, and they moved into a more intimate environment, which was the one we all want, the scene we wanted to see.
Apparently, right above the penthouse, Alfred lives in a wood cabin out in the mountains.
Yeah, right,
right.
Like you do. Here's the anti trope. I thought that Batman didn't kill anybody. But here he is in this movie.
Shooting a gun,
right. Let a dude drop in an elevator shaft.
Well, flying his bat wing directly at a float and then firing machine guns and rockets at the people on the float.
Yeah, that all seems very
and
not
missing
Batman.
Jack Nicholson completely. Yeah. How do you do that with a big target? Superimposed target.
Just drive the plane into Jack Nicholson.
Do you guys think the motorcycle scene at the end of Dark Knight was an homage to the same kind of chicken fight that they had there on the street? You don't think so?
No, I was shocked to watch this again and realize Batman's trying to kill Joker, flat out trying to kill Joker.
True, but there's still that whole who's going to blink and then move. I guess they didn't get to that, though. He just was going to shoot and then he strafed over.
And by the way, that motorcycle scene is right in the middle. It's not even near the end of the Dark Knight.
Yeah.
And that is actually where that you find out that this Joker, Heath Ledger's Joker, wants to die. Won't someone please kill him? He doesn't want to be responsible for his machinations. And he finds out in that scene that Batman is unwilling to do this one thing. So it's actually a pretty good little turning point in the movie.
Yeah.
But this movie doesn't have anything like that. I was shocked. I really thought I was watching a Batman who establishes some things about Batman. This movie almost establishes nothing about Batman. He doesn't even ever like refer to his car or his toys by any names or anything.
That's true.
He didn't refer to his plastic, terrible utility belt as anything but a plastic utility belt. Oh my gosh, that looked bad. Yeah. Some of that stuff is like, ooh. But
you know what looked good?
What?
Kim Basinger. except when she was fainting like every 5 minutes
and screaming every five seconds.
Yeah. I wish they could have portrayed her character differently than the damsel in distress, because I think she really could have done something. They did that later on.
Before I forget about the Batman killing people thing, I had a question for you guys. Did Batman let Jack go into the goop, or did he slip into the goop?
No, he was desperately trying to save him.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
He does that. Batman does this in so many of these movies. Batman's biggest weakness is his forearm strength. He has no abilities. He has no abilities to hold on to. I'm assuming it is because he has no ability to hold on to him or Harvey or Two-Face later on. He can't hold on to Robin, even though Robin is like a freaking, you know, a trapeze artist. He's got like the weakest bat hands of any superhero ever.
He seems to have trouble with that. Yeah.
Forearm strength is my favorite WWE tag team.
Yeah. Nicely done. How about this one? Here's another one this movie can't stop doing. People that go over the rails for no good reason constantly.
That I had that. If you,
at the museum,
if you're
going to
pass out, if you're going to get knocked out, make sure you're not standing against a rail. I'm going over.
Yeah. Exactly. And then when they're, my eyes, I'll move toward the thing and then grab it and then launch myself over it. I don't care if you're blind. You're not going to do that. Right. You're going to go hurl yourself over there.
I got a fun trope.
Oh, no, a fun one.
No one has ever once said, you wouldn't hit a guy with glasses, would you? And not gotten punched.
Oh, yeah.
True story.
Right?
True story.
Hey, does Bruce Wayne have glasses in any of the other movies? I don't think he does.
God, I hope not.
I
remember Val Kilmer wearing glasses.
Kilmer do it? Okay.
Hey, you know what's useless in a car?
What?
A rocket engine. I mean, because they do turns.
Turbine like that. It causes weird centripetal force problems. There's all kinds of problems with that.
Yeah, drift problems.
Now I know they have. Now listen, hold on, back up though. They have one of those in that Mazda RX-8 or whatever, RX-9, whatever it is now. That's a turbine engine. So I don't know if that's different. It's not a rocket, I guess.
But no. if you're not powering the drivetrain directly, then you have what's called understeer, which is what he's talking about. You can't steer.
Yeah.
Much.
This is true.
It's a rocket. I mean, you're pretty much, you're going this direction, especially if you're driving Vicky Vale through the woods. You may want to consider turning off the turbo boost a little bit because it's not going to work. Did you guys notice that the Batmobile is like a big penis?
Yeah.
I'm just.
Not only that.
Back in the day, I don't think I realized that, but I think.
You know what it reminds me of? Remember the big controversy with Camel cigarettes, now that everything was a penis on the camel's head and that? That's what this looked like to me.
You turned upside down or something. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it must have been obvious to other people because, you know, the SNL skits where Batman, they got the Batman Robin knockoff and they drive around in the big penis shape. Yeah. Mobile. You know what I'm talking about? Yeah. The cartoons on SNL.
Ambiguously gay duo. Yeah.
Exactly. And so it's like, I never thought about it back in the late 80s because I just thought it looked really cool. But obviously,
I hate this,
you know,
Batmobile. I am not a fan of this one. I don't like it. It's based, they put it, apparently, it says here that they built it on top of a Chevy Impala frame. Let's see. Right. Is that right? Yeah. Chevy Impala was the chassis they used. And just like the other one, the, what's the new one called? The Bungler? No, the.
Oh, the Tumbler.
The Tumbler.
There you go. I like the Bungler.
the Tumbler would not be very. And like none of the suit and everything Batman does in the movies in real life, you can't move, you can't hear, you can't do anything.
No, he's like an action figure who doesn't have the ability to turn his head.
Right. He has zero points of articulation.
Exactly. Yeah.
Just looks straight ahead, especially with this rubber thing. And you read all these stories about how Keaton couldn't hear anybody. He had to just be sort of handed things that it couldn't get mics in there because they would hurt his ears, so he couldn't hear what the director was saying. Like they make it sound like, oh, he's so acrobatic and so all his powers are based on finesse and, you know, agility. Athleticism. Yeah. And he can't, the car can't turn, the freaking plane can't fly. Like, it's so stupid. I mean, I love it, don't get me wrong, I love me some Batman. But for people who think he's the most grounded of heroes because he doesn't have magic or whatever, I beg to differ.
He's also really easy to beat up, and he falls over really easy. Like when he drops from, after riding up his zip line with Vicky Vale, and he says, all right, hold on to this no matter what. And then he drops, he hits the ground and then falls over. Like he didn't do anything as far as like using his cape to slow himself down. It's like...
His cape in this movie was way more into like just opening and slowly rising someplace or slowly dropping and having his cape get all big and
the smoke bomb at the very beginning, you know, when he's the police are walking and they see him and he throws the smoke bomb and he just stands there for a second, all right, wait for smoke, and then he disappears up, but you see the smoke bomb,
he
doesn't cover anything up.
He's not disappearing. Exactly. It was the worst.
That was,
you can see
bad.
His big old cape. It's like, oh, where'd he go? Gee, I don't know.
I don't know. Maybe straight up.
Idiot.
Did you guys see
he's like a 2-year-old hiding his eyes going, you can't see me.
The little stop motion early on.
Oh, the shadow.
Yeah, where they couldn't, couldn't manage a shadow. What were they doing?
That was animated.
That's my point. Yeah, it was like a little
animated.
It was animated
with an ink blot.
It was terrible. Yeah,
it was. They painted it directly in the cell. I'm assuming that's what they did. That's what it looked like.
It was garbage. It looked terrible. You couldn't have gotten a shot with a shadow? What was the problem there?
That and the spotlights on the factory later on.
In the blanket.
You know, that 89, that was pretty usual technique. What's weird painting on a cell like that for animation.
Right up until that you know, helicopter shot, which was not, it didn't use a helicopter at all, with Batman's ink blot. Right up until that point, I was sitting there going, wow, look at all these wonderful paintings. This movie starts with just glorious paintings, and then they went and ruined it, and they never did do it again. It's got this horrible trope. What's the trope called?
What's the trope called?
Bizarre-architecture, this movie.
Bizarre-architecture. I love it.
It's a city that's supposed to be kind of timeless, but instead all they've done is they have old-timey TVs and old-timey cameras and so forth.
Sometimes.
Right.
Tommy guns. And,
yeah, that sort of thing. And everywhere you look, the bizarre architecture, the buildings are all way too big, unnecessarily big at all times. You know, Wayne Manor makes no sense whatsoever.
It's very, very, very Tim Burton, though. I mean, that's just kind of his motif.
It's very Tim Burton, but it's just kind of sad because it doesn't come across as timeless. It just comes across as we decided to set this in 1947. Period.
So one of my favorite people in this world is Brian Dunaway, but I have to call him out on something real quick here. Sometimes the technique of drawing something, cell animating right onto the celluloid of the film was a technique. Right. Here's another technique for the scene they shot. Have a camera and a dude in a light walking out of the frame so a shadow goes there.
Right. And throw it on a cell, you know, on a background.
This wasn't Star Wars where they needed to make sure that lightsaber was blue. They just needed a shadow.
It's according to a couple of things. It's according if that is an actual set that they put a matte painting in front of, and then they have somebody walk off, or if they were shooting a model. If they were shooting a model, you can't just have somebody step into the
I'm
model
saying they shot a painting. Off. They shot a painting, and they animated a second.
I'm with you.
A second film and laid it over.
I'm with the third guy on the set.
I'm with you, Scott. It could have definitely have been. It was super obvious.
It was
to
horrible.
Us, but I'm not sure how it projected at the theater because you know we're watching it on our 4K TVs at home. I don't know how it looked at the theater.
It would have looked better because 4K is not as high as projection 70 millimeter in a movie theater. So people noticed it.
Visually, you're further from the screen, and visually things are dimmer, and the contrast isn't as high.
It was a big deal. In the 80s, you kind of let a lot of that stuff slide. I agree with you, but it's just so bad.
That's another thing. I was still playing freaking Adventure on the Atari in 1989.
Yeah.
I would have never noticed that as a problem.
You needed an NES real bad, dude. What were you doing with your Atari still?
Well, I had them both. I love switching back and forth. I loved Adventure well into the 90s.
That was a good game.
Warlords, which was another game that had boxes.
Those are two of the three good games that were ever on the Atari.
Pitfall.
The other one was maybe Pitfall. Combat was pretty good. Everything else, utter turds. All right.
Did I miss, not to detract from what you guys were talking about, because I was enjoying that as well. Did I miss a joke that happened at the end when they were in the bell tower with bats in the belfry? Was it just a visual humor, or was it an actual spoken word about bats?
No, it was just a bad joke that isn't funny.
Okay.
Yeah, there was a few of those. I mean, I didn't mind. The cornier the joke, the better when the Joker said it, because I felt like I was into the psychosis of his joke telling. Like, it was not just bad jokes from somebody's dad at a party. It was this crazy person telling terrible jokes, and they made them seem sinister. I'm cool with that. It's when other people tried to be funny, I struggled. I didn't like Arliss from HBO. What's his name? I didn't like his character.
Robert Wool.
Bob.
Yeah, that guy. His interactions with Vicki Vale are whatever, they're fine, but they weren't, you know, nothing made me laugh in this movie except like this town needs an enema or was the other thing the Joker said.
You know, all like, those.
Oh, so many.
That I had forgotten about the oop thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I had totally blocked that out. But, you know, I remember all those sound bites of what the Joker said. because I owned the original Batman soundtrack and I had the Prince soundtrack. And the Prince soundtrack was just overlaid with all of these, you know, the sound bites from Jack Nicholson.
This town needs an enema.
Yeah, it was like who's the band who used to do the Peter Gunn theme, and who am I thinking of?
Art of Noise.
Art of Noise, very Art of Noise, that style.
There was a top 40 song, right?
Yeah, it was a Prince thing. Dance. Yeah, the Bat Dance.
Oh, yes. Have you seen the video lately?
It's terrible.
I blasted out the video a couple weeks ago on Twitter. It's just terribly good. What are you talking about?
It's awful. It's the worst thing ever. Here's a taste of it. I'll just play a little. Let me skip ahead. Oh, what? This is the
or Moonlight Sonata.
Okay, that whole video has the Moonlight Sonata.
Moonlight Sonata.
Why is it doing that? They must not have the rights. Juan Martinez, the channel. Oh, yes. Juan Martinez didn't have the rights.
You will not find the Bat Dance on YouTube. You have to go off the grid to get it. Prince is very protective.
Is he? Okay.
Yeah.
Right. And the whole Prince thing. I'm a huge Prince fan, but sticking him in the soundtrack of this movie it took me out of it, just like the Ruby Rod stuff took me out of Fifth Element.
That's why it's a trope.
Agreed. Totally agree.
It's the trope of the thing that don't belong, and we think the kids will like it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And this is a case where I remember sitting in this movie theater in 1989, and I had read the book and I'd listened to the orchestral score, and then I saw the movie and I'm like, I don't like Prince anymore. I don't like Prince at all. Prince is horrible.
No,
it's his worst work, in my opinion.
I agree. Now, there are tons of people on Twitter already this morning saying it's the best thing in the movie for them, and I cannot for the life of me figure that out. I don't understand.
I'm with them. I love it. I think it's good. I was a big Prince fan.
Nicholson, I don't see his character as blasting Prince music out to dance to on the float as he's coming out.
No.
In 89, were jamboxes still a thing in 89?
Sure, why not? Sure. Yes.
Because that'd be around the cusp.
I didn't have a problem with that. I just had a problem with the musical choice. It's just dumb. It just sounded dumb.
I think Prince
dumb.
Was a perfect choice. I think that Prince was starting to make a comeback during this time. And I've seen Prince do so many experimental things that I thought this was
this isn't experimental though. This is them going, hey, let's get Vanilla Ice to do our turtle rap at the end of this next turtle movie. Right. That's what this is.
And only worse because it felt like somebody had told Prince, do this movie rather than what Prince does, which is whatever crazy stuff occurs to him in the shower, you know? And so Prince tried to take his method and apply the thought about what this movie it must be like. And he just couldn't do it. It was bad.
Yeah, it's bad. Take that, Dunaway. I don't remember
Batman. I think it was bad in a good way. I think it was still enjoyable. Okay. I think even though it was over the top and
least
silly,
favorite part of the movie for me,
I enjoyed it. Of course, also one of my favorite songs by Prince is like Alphabet Street and that kind of stuff. So if you're not into that, if you're like into Doves Cry and that bullshit, that tired old hacky crap.
I love, you know, Let's Go Crazy. I love Around the World in a Day. This was and that Bat Dance song just feels so
produced.
Not produced.
Didn't even feel that produced. It felt underproduced.
Yeah, I mean, it just felt so like patting himself on the back. I don't know what the word I'm looking for is, but self-aggrandizing, is that the thing?
That might be it.
And also, you just didn't get the feeling that you would ever in your life. No one will ever have music that's tailored like this. I mean, for example, other Batman movies. You have Seal. You have Billy
you
Corgan.
Mm-hmm.
These are songs. These are songs that are inspired about other things. They have nothing to do with the movie, but you drag them into the movie and you make them part. That's how music works. Mm. You know, the music of our lives was not tailored to us specifically. This feels like the Joker went and got Prince.
If you're asking if this was some type of, preconceived, like he put it in an egg and he hatched it and it's a beautiful, artful piece. No. Is it spot on for what we were doing? I mean, we were literally in Batmania during this time period. And it almost harkens back in that part of it, the spirit part of it, back to the 60s, where it's just like we go over the top, crazy, screaming. And I thought all of that just fit in perfectly.
Horrible. Mm-hmm. Terrible. I'm trying to find a place to agree on this, and I can't do it. I will give you Rain in Minority Report over this one, because I just think this music is so bad.
Wow.
So
there was a really good example.
I sent you the link to the video, by the way.
There was a really good example, Ruby Rod in The Fifth Element. And The Fifth Element is an admittedly absurd film, also, full of absurdity.
So the part I hate of that movie. I hate that part.
Most of them having to do with Gary Oldman.
Yeah.
But so even then, that was out of place. It was just pushing it a little weird.
Agree.
And this was the same thing. They could have just used some music of anything. If they'd walked into that weird museum restaurant, I've never been to one, but I guess if they'd walked into that museum restaurant blasting country western, it could have been George Strait. It would have been more appropriate to me, because it wouldn't have felt like an exposition of Prince.
I agree. Yeah.
I don't know. Yakety Sax is what I think should have been blasting out of the film box.
Nice. Well, we move from that and Batman seemingly dying six times in the film to some clips. Let's play some clips. We have many of them, and they begin with a scream. Why not? We like screams. Here's a good one to start us off. I think that was actually the lady.
Yeah, that's the lady at the beginning. That's not even Kim Basinger.
Oh, yeah. I lost track of hers and just got the best one and saved that one, which we'll find here shortly. Here's something to do.
Now shut up.
All right.
Shut up.
All right. Okay. Great. I thought that guy was, what's his name? The New York Dolls guy.
Lester Poindexter?
Yeah. Was it not? That actor? No. Okay. I tried to find it. Didn't say it was either uncredited. I saw a lot of names that were credited as Goon, and I never saw that guy. So he looked a lot like him, though. Here's Arliss in his first appearance.
Hello, Lieutenant Eckhart. I hear we just had us another bat attack. That's, what, 8 sightings now in just under a month? I hear the commissioner's even opened a file. True?
Sorry, Knox. These two slipped on a banana peel.
Ooh, Porkins. Did you hear Porkins there?
Porkins and somebody dubbing over Porkins.
Yeah, that wasn't him.
That was not. That was the same guy who did the Pee-wee Herman voice.
Yeah.
Mr. Herman.
Been a few years before this viewing. If you told me a few days ago, hey, you're going to really think Robert Wool nails it, I would have gone, come on, Robert Wool. It's Arliss.
Yeah.
Nails it. Mm. This character comes out of nowhere in this movie, and quite frankly isn't necessary
at all.
He nails it down and walks away with it.
Sure, why not? He's basically Arliss, though. That's this whole character.
Mm-hmm.
All right, here is Porkins again.
Why, Eckhart, you ought to think about the future. You mean when you run the show, you ain't got no future, Jack. You an A1 nut boy, and Grissom knows it.
It's a top men.
Right. Yeah, it's again somebody else doing the voice for William Hoopkins.
It did sound like it wasn't him, didn't it?
Yeah.
I don't know.
On the cigar, and you don't hear any evidence of him chomping on the cigar during that whole scene as he's saying his lines.
Yeah.
There's some overdubbing going on, some really weird overdubbing.
Go ahead.
Were scenes like that necessary for the film?
No.
No.
I felt like there was a bunch of stuff like that that was just, I don't know, I would usually call it fan service, but I didn't even see where it came from the comics.
Yeah. Well, that character is very reminiscent of corrupt cops in Gotham. They always have that guy. And I don't even know if he was based on an older character, but the one in the more current comics you would say would be, I can't think of his name now, but he's a big kind of, you know, overweight, smokes too much, drinks too much cop who is totally in the back pocket of the mob. And that is a mainstay of Gotham lore. I think he was just playing that role.
You kind of need to connect them elsewhere. Then there needs to like be a wrap-up where they interact with the Joker somehow.
I agree. The mob connections in this were weird. I mean, Jack Palance, speaking of which, here he is the first time.
Say this, son of a bitch, makes a connection with us and with Axis Chemicals. What kind of damage are we looking at?
Like a rat. In a maze.
Wow, I did not realize, by the way, William Hootkins, I was looking up to see, obviously we've seen, but we've talked about Raiders of the Lost Ark and of course, Porkins. Didn't realize he was also in Flash Gordon, so he's been all up in film sack before.
What was the one with the weird robots that tried to kill everybody?
The
The wish, the wimpy wumpy walk, yeah, and the wibbly wobbly people.
That's
and,
the guy with the yeah, pervert guy with the yes, with the telescope. Yeah, that guy got around. He had plenty to do.
He's all over film set.
Here's number one guy.
You are my number one guy.
More Jack Palance, please.
Right.
More of that. More of him.
And that was the line that for some reason when they had the Joker try to repeat it later and they got a bad take, they left the bad take in the movie. Has there ever been a reason why they left that in the movie? They have the Joker. Because
he was a dick. He was hard to work with is what I've heard.
Right. He just trails off because he doesn't remember the line. And why is it in the final movie?
I don't know. There's a lot of stuff, if you want to go deep on some of that, where Tim Burton and Jack Palance fought constantly, and Jack Palance would constantly say, "How many movies have you made, son? I've been in 400 of them." Like, constantly just...
Let's do some one-armed push-ups.
Because, he's supposed to be a cantankerous old dude. He was kind of going deaf at this point in his career. People couldn't hear you. Like, he wouldn't hear his cue. He'd be just standing there. So I think it was some of that. Guy's just a hard dude to deal with. Dent being Dent.
Mr. Knox, we have enough problems in this city without worrying about ghosts and goblins.
That's not a denial.
Okay, and then I just capture this part of it. I love that part of his laugh. Is that weird? Can you hear it?
Mr. Knox, we have enough.
See, now you can hear it.
What have we here?
I'm going to Cloud City.
There, Joker also has a bunch of sort of sex jokes.
Yeah, a fair amount.
Did you notice? She could put a steel in the man's strides, and he's got a very long penis gun in his pants, he's laughing and smiling when she starts to go down on him, kind of.
Yeah, that was weird. I don't remember that. And how distracting it was. It was distracting enough that Batman could appear literally right next to him and crack his joke and then punch him. That was intense. All right. We are moving right along to here's Lando.
Hello. What have we here?
Oh, wrong movie. Sorry. Wrong movie. All right. Here's bad Freeze. All right.
Freeze!
Oh, this guy yelling freeze in a bad way. Here's some here's some 80s bullets. All right, there's some 80s bullets.
Boy, are they.
Here's the Joker laughing. Yeah. I really like that.
The Prince Bat Dance ends with Joker laughing and laughing, right?
Yeah.
It's the recording that you hear after he's fallen off the building.
It's slowly coming back to me.
Oh, yeah, the bag of laughs.
Yeah. Here's Laughing Lady.
Three mysterious deaths at a beauty parlor.
I just feel like it there. That's it.
What was up with her jacket?
I didn't notice.
Was that Becky with the 2 tons of jacket she had on with the shoulder pads?
2 tons of jacket? She looked like a Romulan is what you're getting at.
She looked like a little, she was like just consumed by the jacket and she was hunched over and there was like these huge shoulder pads and it was just, ugh.
Well, it'd be better than if your name was Prince and you sound like you're on helium.
Oh, hey, the new king in town.
Seriously, what's that about?
I think that was, not auto-tuned, but his track was sped up to match with a different key.
Or they changed the pitch or something. That was weird.
It was weird.
All right, here's a great line from the Joker.
We've got a flying mouse to kill, and I want to clean my claws.
It's pretty good. Pretty psycho. Now here's domestic abuse, Bruce Wayne. Here you go.
You're a real nice girl, and I like you a lot, but for right now... Shut up.
Yeah, get in your place.
Yeah, he did. He shoved her down. I was like, can you do that? Yeah.
I was surprised at how this only, again, trope of the only woman in the world was treated this movie. My gosh, she was never really treated nicely at all.
89, only Arliss treated her well, I think. And even he was a little smarmy.
He was
in love with her and disappointed that she wouldn't have anything to do with him.
Yeah, he was in the friend zone, serious part time.
here's your famous line.
You ever dance with the devil in the pale moonlight?
I always thought it was from some other thing, but it was straight up just from this movie.
Yeah, I don't even know what that. And that doesn't even really mean anything.
And that's the thing. He says it doesn't mean anything. It's something I like to say. Like,
there's a real tinge of sadness to Ibbot saying that, though.
It just doesn't even mean anything. And the fact that it, and the fact that he says it, it doesn't mean anything is such a waste. I mean, you know.
Second biggest waste in the movie, actually.
Who was the
biggest
first?
Waste in the movie is this Portons? Thing between, no, this thing between Bruce Wayne and Vicki Vale. They're building up to a huge reveal where she finds out that he's actually Batman, and the reveal is never shown. She just comes walking into the Batcave.
Right. Alfred Tell me her. If I'm crazy. What?
Yeah,
what
the and the way he tried, here? The way he had a little fight or flight there for a second, where he's like going to try to run out of there. I'm like, no, dude,
I'm not Batman.
You're in your casuals.
Any other filmmaker would have put a camera behind her and had her walk through the Wayne Manor into the Batcave. After Alfred told her, you should go through that door.
Yeah.
And the big reveal, you would have seen, the camera would have wheeled around and shown her face looking like, oh my God, it's him.
Yeah.
Like, how did we not get that in this movie?
Yeah, they missed out on that. Here's your, I like this joke.
Never rub another man's rhubarb.
I don't know what it means, but
the sex jokes in this movie.
Yeah.
The sex jokes.
Darker version of dance? What? Whatever.
You ever dance with the devil by the pale moonlight?
Oh, yeah, that guy that's done nothing since. Actually writes a lot of stuff now, but he was like in three movies. All right, something about balloons.
He stole my balloons!
Okay, great. Great.
That's when he sucked all the his bat plane and he sucked all the balloons up.
Now, I thought in 89 we were past this, what I'm about to play. I thought we were well past this. Here it is.
Punching the potato sacks.
Awful.
That's right. It's a drum.
It is a drum. You're punching a freaking snare drum.
Such bad sound design. I mean, it's so cheap and lame. I was surprised by that, but I guess you could fix that in a... HDified something version they may put out at one point. Go back and fix all that.
Yeah, fix the shadow. Fix that.
Call Lucas and say, "Hey, what do you do?"
I've got the most recent Blu-ray version of it from the Tim Burton collection, and
still there. Damn it! All right, well, here's Scott Fletcher doing us a little treat. Okay, so here you go.
Batman.
By the way, it's funny. None of us have actually brought up the whole Michael Keaton current deal, which is almost like an homage to Batman, this Birdman film that he's in.
Oh, yeah.
Birdman.
Heard great things about it.
I haven't seen, but yeah, exactly. It's up getting a lot of accolades, a lot of nominations and SAG Awards and Golden Globes. And
yeah, I'm excited. He's great. I like him anyway. I like him no matter what he does. All right, that takes us to this right here. Why, looky there. It's the Film Sack Checklist. Not quite as good as you thought it was? Check. Not quite as bad as you thought? Check. Porkins? Check. All right. Star Trek stuff. We got Tracy Winter. He played Bob the Goon in this. On TNG, he played a Ferengi Crayon, or K-Ron, sorry. Crayon. You know, Crayon the Ferengi.
Right.
It's famous for never having a sharp tip. Anyway.
64 of those Ferengis in a box.
Yeah. See, that was The Last Outpost in 87, and TNG also played a different Ferengi, Barrick, in the sixth season episode Rascals. Soundtrack great. I'd give it an SA for still awesome. I think it's really good.
The Danny Elfman portions of it are great.
Yeah, yes. They're real, real good. All right, let's do a Twitter post. If I seem like I'm hurrying, it's because I know Dunaway has to go somewhere. So listeners, it's not because I'm bored of these people. I really want to stay here all night, but I know he has a thing to go to, so we're going to hurry here.
It's Christmas time.
Twitter post. This is where you guys sum it up. 140 characters or less. Let's start with Randy.
Batman. What makes this one so better than the ones that came before and just after it?
It's not wearing hockey pads.
That's pretty good. Actually, go get some water after that. Jeez, that sounded like it hurt. Yeah, see, that's what I mean.
Exactly.
Brian Dunaway.
Batman. Congratulations. Princess Major movie rad. Now shut up and take your Smilex.
Smilex. So dumb. And then finally, Brian Ibbett.
Batman. Michael Keaton plays Bruce Wayne about as tough as I imagine Michael Keaton to be. Or Buster Keaton.
Nice. Well, then you might like one of my alternate titles that were just handed to me. Fits right in with your thing there. Here's the first one, possible. Aren't you a little short for Batman? Or two... we need a guy to carry a boombox around everywhere we go. Great.
Oh my God. They never made the aren't you a little short joke.
Nope, they never did. It should have.
Ah, in a movie filled with tropes, I you rarely see a movie with this many tropes.
Well, he was a shorty.
They didn't have that joke. Yeah. And by the way, can I forgot one trope I have to bring up.
Uh-oh, do it.
Bored to death. Man.
Bored to death trope?
The boardroom of the villains where somebody or all are going to die. Yeah, that right. is so good.
Watch me make this pencil disappear.
Yeah, the same thing in a new Batman movie.
Yeah.
By the way, that was the 2008 movie was the movie that killed all the previous record holds or records that this movie still held, even up through Begins, held the biggest opening for any superhero movie adaptation comic thing ever. And had held that through inflation, you know, adjustments all the way up until 2008's Dark Knight, which is kind
that
of
is awesome.
It's kind of intense.
I love Bored to Death. That trope just the I always sit there and I'm just gawking like, why are these people all in this room around this table? Yeah. Why would you do that? Like, even if they made a rule like where there are no guns allowed in this meeting of the villains, no one would show up. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows that right. someone's going to die when you go to the board to death.
Mm-hmm. Do they set that up in Outlook? Like, do they say, hey, henchman meeting today, 3 p.m.
It's like a Google, Google calendar invite.
Right, exactly.
Even by the way,
I can't do 3. Can we do 3:30?
Yeah, 3:30.
By the way, even if you're not a villain, or if you're convinced that everybody you're about to go into a meeting with isn't a villain, the movie Star Trek Into Darkness reminded us that if you're just powerful, the villain will try to kill you.
Yeah, and you shouldn't be in that meeting. It happens. Yeah. It happened in. There's so many movies that do this. Like Star Wars does it. Freaking Al Capone did it in Untouchables. Like, it's just a thing. If there is a group of people and you are all together and you represent the crime bosses of the area, one or more of you are going to die right now. That's awesome.
And this, by the way, that was the scariest thing to me when I was a young teenager watching this movie. That murder with the buzzer that I guess is somehow carrying a million volts.
And doesn't affect Jackie Nicholson at all.
Yeah.
Right. Or anybody around. That would have arced over to everybody in the room as powerful as it was.
Just the smell of burning hair alone.
Mm-hmm. Oh, dude, gross. That's disgusting.
I had nightmares about that scene.
Yeah.
Seriously. Really?
I'll never forget. No. It's still vivid because you said the hair burning thing. It brought back the memory immediately of my brother Matt, who still didn't know English very well at the time in high school when he had this project. But he had a project where we couldn't have lights for 3 days. So the power had to be out all the time. You could have candles. So he made candles everywhere. And I guess it was to make you appreciate, you know, what it's like to not have all our conveniences or whatever. But he was bored and was leaning over one of his candles, and his hyper ignitable hair, Korean hair, caught on fire and like made this explosion in the kitchen.
Oh my God.
And it was like a flash. It didn't like burn or catch on fire necessarily. It was more like a flash bulb.
Did he have product in it? Like, did he have something?
No, he just has this really coarse, weird hair, and both of his eyebrows and most of the front of his hair just fell to the table in ash. And that was the end of it. And I'll never forget the smell that put off.
Oh God. Yeah, I'm sure.
It was awful.
Bear with me. I'm tweeting the phrase hyper ignitable Korean hair.
That's definitely worth a tweet.
It's amazing.
Our next film. Oh no, let's do an email. We got an email here from
side cover band.
It's pretty good. Gregory Schultz wrote in, and he says, Hogan. No, he says, hey gang, you guys do a commentary track of TV shows, and I love those. You guys should do a live commentary track of live musicals on NBC. I would have loved to have heard Randy lose his mind as Christopher Walken phoned in his performance as Captain Hook. A date has not been announced for the next NBC live musical, but it will be The Music Man. Keep eating that burrito, Gregory Schultz.
So here's the thing. We would have to all agree to DVR it somehow. Or it needs to be on Hulu Plus the next day. That's the only way we can really...
A couple of you are cord cutters.
Yeah, I couldn't do it. I mean, not live anyway. I could do it over an antenna or something. But even then, we'd want to do it live because that's the only time they show that is live.
Yeah.
So that people could watch it with us. That would be the whole point.
Yeah.
That's a hard one. That's a hard one.
We could Twitch stream the thing. We could promise to do a live Twitter commentary or something like that.
Yeah, something like that. Or we could be all on Twitch trying to do it, but it wouldn't be nearly as cohesive, and people after the fact the archive would be less useful.
Yeah.
Because they're not repeating that or, you know, putting it on DVD or anything, as far as I know.
I just want to suggest, if you're listening to this episode of FilmSack, and you want to interact with us on Twitter, go retweet FilmSack having just said hyperignitable Korean hair.
Yeah, that's how we know who you are. That's how we know you really are dedicated to the show. Speaking of which, next week, Rocky IV.
Dude, it's Christmas.
It's our Christmas episode, the Rocky IV, because we take a couple of weeks off every year right around Christmas and New Year's. But before that, Rocky IV, this is the one finally.
This is
with
Dolph Lundgren. This is the invention of Dolph Lundgren.
Yeah.
I will break him.
Yeah. Where he was supposed to be German. Russian.
I am so happy about this because it's really hard to remember back when movies like this were still sort of innocent. Mm-hmm. There's an innocence to it.
Sure.
And I'm really looking forward to this.
Me
man.
Too. Oh. Me too. Mm-hmm. Rocky IV, may it ever be the greatest thing we ever do. I'm going to leave people now with a reminder that the outro song here is different, and I'm going to play it again because a ton of you wrote in and said you liked it. So I'm going to try it again this week.
Sure, why not?
If you liked it, well, then I guess we'll keep it. Filmsack.com, by the way, is our website. Please go there, participate in the fun things that we do because there's plenty to do there. Filmsack@gmail.com is our email address. Keep those emails coming on Twitter. We're at Filmsack. Leave us a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever podcasts are distributed to the public. It's going to do it for us, for me, for Brian, and for Randy. We'll see you next time.
4 Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.
I didn't know it had lyrics in it. I had no idea.